Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, February 19, 2014, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are Missouri School of Journalism colleagues Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, did an NBC reporter go too far making Bodie Miller cry during a televised interview? A merger between Comcast and Time Warner Cable, bad for consumers? And a new era in late-night television begins as Jimmy Fallon takes over The Tonight Show. There's a lot more, hopefully, that we'll get to as well, but we're going to start with Saturday's return of the Westboro Baptist Church to Columbia to protest the support that the campus community lent Michael Sam after coming out as gay.
Comforted in his sin, Michael Sam. This past week, just absolutely went crazy when he announced, he told the world he was a filthy pervert and a rebel against God, and they fawned all over him.
Mizzou sophomores Kalani Lakers and Alex Carruth used Facebook to organize a counter-protest. Hundreds showed up and created a silent human wall in solidarity to Sam and their Mizzou family.
We're both Christians, and the thing is that God is love. God is love, and what they're doing is hateful, but just the fact that they are being hateful and that is a sin, we're also supposed to show love to them. So that's why we're keeping it a peaceful protest, yeah. And we're not going to be, yelling things at them or being vulgar. It's not about that.
That video is courtesy of CBS affiliate KRCG. KMIZ reported from the scene, as did the Columbia Daily Tribune, the Missourian, even KBIA, which doesn't have weekend newscasts, posted an update to its website. Only one major local media outlet chose not to send a reporter to the scene, KOMU-TV. News director Stacey Wolfel offered us this statement, the same one he posted in response to a viewer's inquiry on Facebook. He said, "We made an editorial decision some time ago that the Westboro Baptist group lacks news value. Early protests by the group had newsworthiness, but since the protests are now always the same and appear to take place anytime gay issues come to the fore, there's no news to cover there anymore. Some would say the gathering of the people to oppose the group is newsworthy, but proper journalism would require us to interview and feature people on both sides of the protest line. Since we don't see any news value in Westboro protests, not including them in the newscast means not including those opposed to them either. We did, of course, see news value in Michael Sam's announcement and covered that at what I consider to be the appropriate level last week. So I'm going to open it up to the two of you. Agree or disagree?"
I could make an argument for either point of view. You should cover it or you should not cover it. I think that Stacey Wolfel has made a case for why not to do it. I wouldn't have done it that way. And I'll tell you why. Because, it may or may not be true that the Westboro people who only show up when the cameras are present, they only show up because reporters are going to be there. They say the exact same thing time and time again. You can make the case that that's not news. But when 500 or more students show up as a counter-protest around a story that's already in the news, I could make a case that that's pretty darn newsworthy. The other thing I'd say is you can make a decision if you're a news organization to send a reporter or a videographer to the scene and then decide after the fact whether that story is going on the air or not. What if something had occurred there? They wouldn't have been in place to cover that story. Everybody else would have. So I think I would have at least had somebody present just in case. And then one other thing, and I want to let Ernest jump in here, but it seems to me that they missed an opportunity, KOMU did, for a different story. You quoted all these other folks that covered it. Everybody but the Channel 13 gave maybe a little bit of video or acknowledged the fact that the Westboro people were there, but didn't quote a single one of them. Do you have to have some sort of moral equivalency or balance between all the elements of a story? I don't think so. This story was about how the community rose up against these people and in support of Michael Sam. Is that a legitimate story? Yes, it is. And I don't have to give the same amount of airtime or quotes to the Westboro people for that to be a legitimate news story.
Well, I think Mike brings up a good point in the fact that I think KOMU needed to have someone there in case something did happen. I mean, I understand where Stacey Wolf was coming from in terms of the fact that Westboro seems to do the same thing at every event. They come out to every event involving the gay community in which they seem to say, wait a minute, there's another side here that yes. doesn't agree with what's happening in terms of the gay movement. However, I think Mike is right that you need to have someone out there. I also think that it's also an opportunity to further the story, and I think that that actually happened in some cases. But I also think that the media missed an opportunity in talking to the people who are out there about the Michael Sam issue and how that's actually showing that the gay movement is moving in a different direction, that it's gaining more acceptance in various ways in terms of sports, as well as in the legal side, as well as in the economic side. So I think there are various ways in which the media could have played that story out and not just focused on Westboro.
I thought it was interesting too, just to follow up on what Ernest is saying. Imagine 10 years ago, if for whatever reason Michael Sam had been brave enough then to come out as gay, would he have been invited as part of the team to show up at Mizzou Arena for the basketball game to get the Cotton Bowl trophy or whatever? Would a huge crowd of fans, not just students, have given a standing mm-hmm. ovation to Michael Sam? Probably not. And that was a story in and of itself. And yet, if you aren't there to cover the, quote, protest or counter-protest, how do you put that event in any context? KOMU had a little wire story on their website about Michael Sam being acknowledged at the basketball game, but they had no story for which to insert that into to provide the proper background for it.
Yeah. So how hard is it when you are the one or the only news organization in a market to skip a story like that?
Well, I mean, it's a decision. It's a decision you make, and you know that there are going to be consequences for that decision. And it's just, do you stand by it? And I'm pretty sure that the reason Stacey put the statement out there about here's why we didn't do it was because they were getting some feedback as to why weren't you out there covering that story? You're a major player in the media market here, and for you to make the decision not to cover it can have an impact in terms of people turning to your competition and saying, well, hey, if they're going to cover it, I may want to watch them, not just for this story, but for all stories.
You know, this was also an opportunity, as we found out from talking to some of our colleagues in the school over at the Missourian.
Yes.
This was an opportunity for some real audience engagement. It's the kind of story that gets a lot of comments, gets a lot of people to provide some sort of feedback. And this was, you could have argued, well, this was an opportunity lost from that standpoint for KOMU too. But they have a much broader, more diverse, and in some ways more rural and conservative audience than, say, the Missourian does. So the risks are a little different.
Yeah. What we had heard from the Missourian is that this was the third most viewed story on the Missourian's website since 2011, and that there had been a lot of sharing and a lot of engagement going on there, and that's where a lot of that traffic had come from. There's an interesting post on our links blog that I hope you'll take some time to go read. It poses some questions about local TV news. According to a Pew Research study, 3/4 of all adults get their news from local TV broadcasts. But the author asks, what if the news they're consuming just isn't trustworthy? What if, like this, it's simply a press release repackaged and sent out via feeds?
Some people think the top story today is the big winter storm hitting the East Coast. Or maybe the big story is the Sochi Olympics. But judging by local news across the nation, there's an even bigger story that's sweeping our country.
It is 19 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, everybody. Those without a sweetheart this Valentine's Day may look to their smartphone or tablet to help direct Cupid's arrow their way, while those with a special someone may look to their mobile device to help them say, I love you.
Those with a special someone may look to their mobile device to help them say, I love you.
Those with a special someone may look to their mobile device to help them say, I love you.
Those with a special someone may look to their mobile device to help them say,
I love you.
Those with a special someone may look to their mobile device to help them say, I love you.
You don't need to hear any more to get the picture. Conan O'Brien produces a piece like this once every couple weeks, yet newscast producers are still putting this feed content into their shows without rewriting the scripts, and anchors are reading it. It's a practice called ripping and reading, and we're seeing a lot more of it. Even after the embarrassment of repeatedly, sometimes we see stations two or three or four times showing up in these things. Even after that embarrassment on late night TV, we aren't really seeing these practices change in our newsrooms. Why is that?
Because as I tell my students quite often, journalists are inherently lazy. And this is one of those instances where if it's already been written for you, it comes across very well, it plays to the audience, you're going to run with it. And it doesn't matter how many times you show up on Conan O'Brien or on Comedy Central or just name the show, they're going to continue to do it because it's easy to do. It's just one of those things.
And frankly, for good or for ill, the largest portion of the audience is watching local television news. Like most news outlets now, is still kind of skewing older. So the people that are seeing these bits on their local newscast are not watching Conan O'Brien. They're not watching Comedy Central. They're not the right demographic for those programs. So what's the risk for the station? Well, I'll tell you what one risk is. I mean, you're right. The Pew study shows that almost 3/4 of Americans say they get their news from local television news. And there is a lot of good local television news content out there. But what the study also shows is that those folks don't watch for very long at any one sitting. And that's a problem in terms of loyalty. That's a problem in terms of being able to cover local news in depth. And when you run this kind of junk, instead of running more in-depth stories, maybe fewer stories but longer ones that are more important to the audience, you run the risk of eventually somebody's going to do that instead of you.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see whether or not people are actually seeing this story, because a lot of these stories run toward the end of the newscast. And by that time, most people have probably checked out, especially if they're there just to get the local news and the weather. By that point, they're so in tune with how the way in which news is given to them that they already know, okay, I can check out at this point.
The stuff I really, really need to know is going to be in that first segment. Then I'm going to get weather. Then I'm going to get something a little bit lighter. Then I'm going to get sports. And then I'm going to get the silly kicker at the end. And everybody says goodbye and has happy chat.
Pretty much.
And we've stacked newscasts like that ourselves in the past. In other jobs. And we know how that formula makes it easier for us to get our jobs done. We know that newsrooms are doing more with less, more newscast time, the same or fewer numbers of people to fill it. So I get all of the arguments for why it's easier to do it that way, but I think the gains are not going to be there for us in the long run.
And I also think that what we really need to pay attention to is whether or not the canned news that's coming in is actually coming in, that it's verifiable, it's accurate, that sort of thing. Because there's a lot of it that's being sent in that they're using.
And in a case like this one, it's about a phone app. It's basically nothing more than a glorified advertisement that somebody's putting together and you're just throwing on the air.
But when you start seeing the business news that way or the healthcare news that way, then you need to really start questioning whether or not it's a glorified advertisement or it's really providing news and information that people can use.
Okay, well, we might need to rely on late night TV to help keep us honest. Speaking of late night TV, a changing of the guard at NBC this week.
Welcome to The Tonight Show. This is the first Tonight Show broadcast from New York in over 40 years. Great, huh? Welcome. I'm Jimmy Fallon, and I'll be your host for now. Of course, I wouldn't be here tonight if it weren't for the previous Tonight Show host, so I want to say thank you to Steve Allen, Jack Parr, Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien, and Jay Leno. Very, very nice. Amazing.
Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show debut Monday night was marked with more than a dozen special guests, including Robert De Niro, Lady Gaga, Sarah Jessica Parker, Joan Rivers, Bono, Will Smith. But critics said even with all the A-listers passing through, the show wasn't all that surprising. Mike, you said you had watched it the other night.
I did watch the first night, and I find Jimmy Fallon to be likable and funny without being insulting. He's certainly not you know, sharp, cutting edge, caustic, whatever you want to say, like some of the other late night hosts. So if you're NBC and you're looking for a more broad-based audience that you hope will be a little bit younger, it's probably a pretty good choice. The first show, you know, he was very self-deprecating and all of that. So, I mean, he was setting himself up to introduce himself to some folks who, the old Jay Leno crowd, trying to get them to stick around. He did the bits that satisfied his younger audience on late night. You know, you two, I don't know how relevant that is with a younger audience now, but seeing them perform on the top of, you know, Rockefeller Center instead of in some studio was really cool. Yeah. Will Smith, they did a great bit with him dancing, but the interviews, in fact, the interviews with both Will Smith and with U2 were just terrible interviews. I mean, I'm not expecting Jimmy Fallon to be a great interviewer, but why even do those segments if they're going to be as boring as they were?
Well, I think at least what I'm starting to see is that whether it's Jimmy Fallon or it's the other late night talk show, David Letterman, the interview segments tend to come off as being very boring or sort of scripted. You know, it's almost like you know what's coming. I think if he's going to really reach an audience, it's going to be in what he does outside of those interviews, who he brings on, and whether or not those people resonate with the crowd that he's trying to reach.
So let's talk about that interviewing for a second. Sometimes late night TV makes news. Stars looking to promote their work or engage in some kind of damage control, politicians looking to pick up a vote or two, they all make a stop on the late night couch. That requires the comedian turned host to sometimes ask the tough questions. That's something that CNN's Chris Cuomo thinks that some do better than others.
Who pushes in late night television?
Who pushes? You know, sometimes Letterman will. Sometimes Letterman will say things that make people uncomfortable because he just doesn't care anymore.
A little bit, but they're not really knowing it. I mean, even like, you know, the court jester himself, Jon Stewart, when he gets a heavy in the chair next to him, he's either making jokes or he's nodding his head, yes, yes, yes. I don't know that the bar will be that high for Jimmy Fallon to be an accountability guy.
I mean, frankly, I think that that's a perfectly good excuse for Jimmy Fallon to break the mold. I mean, he's already been doing things, and frankly, so has Conan O'Brien, been doing things to make YouTube-friendly, social media-friendly chunks of his show, the bits, the music. And that's what they really need to focus more on, because that young audience, whether they come and watch religiously at 10:30 our time or not, they can still be encouraged to get that content online. And that's maybe not as good right now with advertisers, but at least it's better than these irrelevant interviews that nobody wants to watch.
And the thing about it is, I mean, Jon Stewart has done that, especially with his openings. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is put online in these little chunks that people can pick up and send to their friends or throw on their Facebook page and that sort of thing. So I think if they sort of adapt a little bit of that, they're definitely going to be relevant. And the interview part that they were talking about with Jon Stewart, I think that, you know, that is his way of sort of reaching out to maybe an older demographic, but it's those first segments that I think really going to matter in late night television.
And I guess I'll say, I mean, there's really nobody in late night TV that's appealing to the demo they're going after that's doing hard hitting interviews. David Letterman, I don't know.
Yeah,
Charlie Rose, maybe, but who?
But,
this
but
is
Charlie
not the
Rose
audience watching.
Going for that audience.
And he can be as sycophantic with his guests as anybody else can be. I mean, part of the problem is going to be if you think you've got to continue to interview celebrities because that's the only way you get them on the show. Show, then the better the celebrity is and the more out front they are, the more engaging they are, then the better the host is going to be.
And it's getting those celebrities that's really going to count. I mean, people are going to tune in and watch based on who you're going to bring to either sit on the couch or perform on the stage. And if you can't do that, then your late night program is irrelevant.
Okay, well, while we're on the subject of asking tough questions, some are saying NBC's Kristen Cooper went too far in this post-race interview with Bodie Miller, done right after he'd won the bronze medal in the Super G.
Bodie, you're showing so much emotion down here. What's going through your mind?
I mean, a lot, obviously. Just a long struggle coming in here, and just a tough year, and
I know you wanted to be here with Chile, really experiencing these games, and how much does it mean to you to come up with a great performance for him, and was it for him?
I mean, I don't know if it's really for him, but I wanted to come here and I don't know, I guess make myself proud, but...
When you're looking up in the sky at the start, we see you there, and it just... looks like you're talking to somebody. What's going on there?
So our viewers who are watching with us on television or on the internet can see Bodie Miller is now bending over, and he's doubled over with emotion. And the NBC directors are staying with this image on the screen as he's having this emotional breakdown. Having seen that interview, did she go too far?
I don't know. I mean, you could make the case that she maybe asked one question too many, but she was a former professional skier herself. She knew Miller. He didn't think the questions were out of line. He said so later that it wasn't her fault. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, I kind of thought that this was part of the bargain. These athletes have gotten a lot of attention and through the media. They've made their names through the media. So it was a legitimate line of questioning. I think it made him human. I think it told us a little bit about how important his brother was to him. I was okay with it.
I'm with Mike. I was okay with it. I mean, this is the kind of emotion that people are used to seeing at the Olympics. Now, this may have come across to some people as the journalist maybe pushing a little bit too far. But it's a legitimate question. If he's mumbling some words at the top of his run, and people are going to want to know, what is he saying? Who is he talking to? That's a legitimate question. And, of course, when he starts to break down, you see the reporter sort of back away and let him have his moment. And I think for the camera to stay on that, I think shows the emotion of this person and shows him, as Mike said, as being human.
I mean, it was a calculated move because all of that was taped.
Right. We talked last week about the 10-hour difference between here and
Sochi. So they could have cut away at any point when they were showing that to the audience. But I think since they went to that point and you see the reporter squeezing his arm, you know, comforting him, then you see his friends and his wife coming up. I mean, that makes the guy human. And it's why we watch the Olympics, not just to see the sports performances, but to try to relate to those folks as people. They're not like us in any way when it comes to their athletic abilities. Maybe they're like us in some other ways, and this helps us to see that.
And here's the thing, that the media is always being accused of being of staging events. You can't stage this.
No.
You know, and for the camera and the media to stay with it and for them not to cut away from that or to not show that shows that this is not staged. This is real. Even though it's not live, this really happened. And it's a part of the entire story of Bodie Miller.
Okay. When the nation's largest cable company buys up the second largest, what will that mean for customers? That's a question top of mind for many Comcast and Time Warner Cable customers right now. Last week, Comcast announced it agreed to buy Time Warner Cable for $45 million. And if regulators approve the merger, the massive cable company will provide service to 1 in 3 American homes. That's a lot. How likely are regulators to approve this?
I don't know the answer to that for sure. I mean, you've got lots of different potential folks who could step in. The FCC has not in the past done much to try to stop these big mega mergers. They have acted to try to stop cross-ownership, companies trying to own newspapers, TV, radio in the same market. But mergers, they haven't. The Justice Department could weigh in. The Federal Trade Commission could weigh in terms of antitrust grounds. Congress could weigh in. I don't know, though. I think the track record is likely that this will go through. And if it does go through, I think it's nothing but bad news for consumers.
This is going to be one of those issues where there's going to be a lot of pressure placed on the Justice Department under this president not to allow this to happen because of the fact that you're going to have somewhat of a monopoly there. But I think the biggest push against it is going to come from the satellite distributors, and it's also going to come from entities like ESPN and HBO and those, because there's going to be a clear fight there for dollars, because now you're going to have Comcast being able to negotiate for higher rates with those entities in terms of whether or not you're going to be able to get ESPN. And with now the live sports, the SEC network, which is going to be huge here, there are people who are really going to want that. And Comcast is going to be able to ask for more money for you to get that.
This is just such a complex situation because the Comcast-Time Warner merger creates this hydra. I mean, they are content providers, NBC Universal, that entire family of program providers. They are owning the distribution network, the cable network, and there are no competitors really in that marketplace, or very few in any communities around the country. And they're going to be the biggest broadband carrier in the country, and they can throttle back if they want to, thanks to the court ruling on net neutrality. They can throttle back access to Netflix and Hulu and other things. So it could really be difficult for the consumer who wants more choice. And if anybody thinks they're going to bring prices down by being able to negotiate with the ESPNs of the world to try to – it's crazy.
Yeah.
Cable prices never go down.
Yeah, they've never, ever – gone
no, and
down.
And that's not going to, and it's not just going to be cable prices going down. You best believe your internet's probably going to go up too. And that's the key, because Mike talked about Netflix and Hulu mm-hmm. being able to stream into homes. I mean, now not only are they going to be able to control the television distribution, but now they're going to have that under their control as well. And all bets are off when you come down, because there's no competition. If there's no competition, then they can set the price.
Well, and another part of it too is Comcast is regularly ranked among some of the worst customer service providers in out there, frankly, that when you grow even bigger and have even more control over the market, what impetus is there to provide good customer service?
And see, there are one of the arguments I've seen them make is that, well, when we have the combined resources of Comcast and Time Warner, we'll be able to innovate more because we'll have, you know, more control over resources. We can improve customer service. The problem is, I don't think that anybody believes they're going to do that. I mean, they are going to get more, if take in more money or pay out less money to the program providers. But who's going to benefit from that? Their stockholders, their shareholders might benefit from it. But are we going to benefit from it? Are people out in smaller communities or rural areas going to get better broadband? I wouldn't think
so.
In
a lot of cases, they have a hard enough time getting broadband.
Getting broadband to begin with.
Our folks, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, part of the issue here, mm-hmm. the larger issue, mm-hmm. is deregulation. There have been this huge push, the airline industry, now the telecommunications industry, for deregulation. Well, this is the downside to deregulation. When you have less competition, then who actually is going to control, number one, what services people are going to get, what customer service they're going to get, and what the prices are going to be? And if you look at the airline industry right now, with all the mergers that have gone on, the one biggest complaint that people have right now in terms of the airline industry is consumer mm-hmm. services and how you're treated when you show up at the airport to get on your flight. And right now, having been in a lot of airports this year, it's not pretty out there if you're a traveler. And I think the same thing could happen here.
And it can very easily happen. How many times have we all sat home waiting for the cable guy and they come in the last 35 or 40 seconds of a window?
Yeah.
Well, we have about a minute or so left. I very quickly want to touch on something going on at the New York Times. They've now officially brought on Chris Wiggins, a biologist who is from Columbia University, who'd been there on sabbatical. He's now going to be there to serve as the newsroom's data chief. The hire is now official as of this week. He'll spend one day a week at the paper, leading its yet-to-be-built machine team. Talk for a second about the idea of bringing a scientist in to lead the data team.
Well, the most important thing is to say that data is becoming more and more useful to us to figure out what our readers, viewers, listeners want. And now if you've got a data scientist and a team of people who can actually devise strategies so that the computers can, the network can learn more automatically about your behavior, that's a good thing if you're trying to target your customers or you're trying to get your audience more engaged.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank you all for joining us and spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about all of the topics we talked about today. Check out the Links blog under the Talk Show tab at kbia.org. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @viewsonkbia. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, to leave comments for us, questions, whatever. See previews of what we'll be talking about next week and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, to Pat Akers for handling the audio. Josie Herrera is our associate producer. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when Ernest, Mike, and I are back for another edition of Views of the News.